Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Arlene Cohen.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who take little slivers of steel and jam them into cloth.
So thank you, Gary, for having me. And I have listened to your, midweek shows, actually all your shows, enough to know that when you introduce it like that, it's been a rough week in your world. This is not a fine art week, huh?
No, I'm not feeling the fine art thing, no. Mm-mm, no. We're hoping for that to come around in the second half of the week. But right now, no, I'm not feeling the fine art, no.
Little slivers of steel. That's yes. Okay.
Oh, I can make it more violent. You just give me a chance.
It's usually the stabbing that I hear. So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, stabbing is important. speaking of rough weeks, and I can only imagine, Christine not with us this week, because if you've ever worked in corporations, particularly in a management position, summer sales meetings weeks are something that you do not look forward to. And this week is summer sales meeting week for Christine. Mine was last week. And I work for a small company now, so it was just one day, and it was quite painless. But I've worked with the big companies where it's 3 or 4 days of these all days, and then dinners at night, and then get up and do it again. So, yeah, Christine is occupied with that, and I do not envy her. So thanks for filling in for Christine.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I have always enjoyed having good conversation with you and talking about stitching, you know, what's better. So yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Okay. So we have now, in my opinion, in the floss tube world, and I don't watch a lot of floss tube people. I have my select little group that I watch and in the time that I have allotted, that's the people I watch. And you set the bar for me early on. You set the bar for looking around, under, and over projects as you talked about them. And to me, the signature move was looking between the upright of a scroll bar and the actual canvas.
Yes.
That was your signature move. And you are, in my opinion, still the queen of the look around, over, and under the project moves in a floss tube video. So, you know, still the queen, but now I have to say, that this week, Michelle Garrett has put a move on you that you're going to have to up the game.
Okay. I haven't watched her from today yet. So,
I'm going to describe the move because it was impressive.
Okay.
Okay. Now, and the other thing is Michelle Garrett, which is her actual name, and then Bendy Stitchy. And which is her online stitching and then yoga,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or at least her yoga. dream to do yoga. Yes. I've noticed recently others that she is quickly becoming Michelle Bendy.
She goes by Michelle Bendy. I won't even say that's her Instagram, Michelle Bendy. And because there's a number of Michelles in Flosstube world, and sometimes you need to like identify who you're talking about, she goes by Michelle Bendy, or some people just call her Bendy.
it's gotten down to Bendy. Okay.
It has just gotten down to Bendy. But anyway, keep going.
So, okay. So she had the signature move now. And now she has an advantage over you and I in that she has these long, skinny arms. So in this week's thing, she took the right arm and framed her head by reaching up and over and framed her head with her arm and then held the project on the left side over her shoulder. Okay. That was impressive because that has, from a photographic perspective, that has your thirds, you know, your good composition on the screen. You know, she really set that up, but then she went that step further. And you know how you'll often hold a piece of cloth behind your project so it will show better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then she draped it over her shoulder. She had a white shirt on and she draped it over her shoulder so she didn't even have to hold the cloth up. Yeah, it would. So, Arlene, I got. Yeah, I mean, you know.
So
There it
she
is.
Was, I feel like I've seen her do this move before. So she was basically, it was just to hold it up high and not have her arm in front of her face. Is that?
Okay. Right. She wraps the arm around her head. And yes, I believe that move has been done. But then to use the white shirt and the shoulder,
yeah,
that was that extra element that she brought in. So I'm just putting it out there, Arlene, that, you know, this is where we're at in this spectrum. So.
Right. So you know, we're now going to be competing for classy moves on how to show off your projects.
I just make the observations, okay. Arlene. I just make the observations. All right. Mm-hmm. So there you have it. There you have uh-huh. it. You know, and I know she's a friend, so it's not like we have this adversarial thing going on.
But we're going to, I will need to talk to her about this, and I will need to ponder carefully before my next floss tube.
Yes.
How am I going to be showing my projects in terms mm-hmm. of what they're on and what's Gary going to think about when I show them in terms?
Well, I'm watching.
You clearly are. You clearly are.
But see, the thing is, and we got to get off this here pretty quick here, but the thing is that you still are the queen because of the versatility you have with different types of needlework, different sizes. See, you still have... you know, the spectrum of moves.
Okay.
But that one this week, she really, it was a marker there. So,
all right.
So there you have it. There you have it right there.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's it. I'm just putting it out there.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. So, all right. So my stitching, quickly about my stitching. And then I got to hear about what you're doing with Works by ABC.
Absolutely.
So Anasazi Song is my needlepoint thing that I'm in the home stretch mm-hmm. on, and I'm scrambling to get done because I want to start stitching Sarah Brazier, the sampler. I have Sarah Brazier. The linen is on the scroll rods. It's ironed. It's marked. I'm ready. I know where to start. All the thread is and I can't get to it because I want to finish this Anasazi Song because I am so close. But
so you're not letting yourself like even put a stitch in until.
I gotta finish this thing.
Okay.
But I thought I was almost done. I thought it was in the home stretch. And then there's these two on either side, Byzantine stitches laying three strands of DMC of Threadworks overdyed. And so you take the strand of Threadworks and you separate it into two sets of three. And then you do one side with one and one side with the other so that they'll match up across the way. The over dye, you know, will match up, semi-match up. It's not perfect, and you don't try to make it perfect. And of course, laying a Byzantine zigzag, laying three strands, and I'm so picky, and I thought I'd never get done. just this slow death march up the canvas. Well, I got there last night. I got finished. So now it's just some trim stuff and some specialty stuff on either end, and I'm done. So... I want to get to that Sarah Brazier.
Now, you're doing it in the original colorway, correct?
Okay. Yes, this one I am. Yes,
because I'm looking at the picture on Carol Lake's website because I just wanted to because I know I've seen pictures of you working on this and I love like the composite stitches that are in it and I love like all the pieces that are a part of it. I admit that I've tried to picture what would it look like in a different color scheme. just as, you know, that the colors just don't sing to me. I'm putting that out there. Colors, you know, we all have our different appreciation of colors. The stitches really appeal to me. Like what's going on in that piece, like the variety of things that are going on in there. So in between the zigzags, there's stitching going on in between the zigzags, right?
Yeah, it's a pearl silk that it's just angled over like three or four, just to fill those in, and then there's an edge that goes up the sides, and then it's based on a rug, so the ends are kind of a fringe look, but yeah, those get filled in, and now see this, you know, and that's each other's taste. This color set appeals to me.
Yes, you've talked about that before.
Yeah, and I think it's Arabian Night is the overdye, the Karen Collection overdye that's at the core of it. And Carol, all three of the song, spirit, and dance, I think it is, are all based on that. But I have the other two. But I think I'm the next one is going to be a blue setup.
So will you use like a totally different, like not the Arabian Night, or will you use? Okay. Right.
No, I'm going to go get an over dye that is, because blue is my favorite color. I can't help it. So I'm going to go get an over dye that has blues in it, and then I think build it from there, because I want to see the next one. I want to see what it would look like in blues, because I think, well, I mean, the design's terrific, and all three of them are, and I think it will work in any color way, and so it's, but yeah, you'd enjoy it because it's a good challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a good challenge, but it's not an overwhelming challenge. I will say that it looks overwhelming, but it's really not. And yeah, you'd enjoy it because there's no boredom in this thing at all, other than the Byzantine slog up the sides. Oh man, I thought I'd never get done. But yeah, it's and they're not gigantic. It's not a gigantic piece. Well, so,
oh, that was because. What is the size? Like overall, I see it's on 18 count canvas, but what's the approximate size?
I think the stretcher bars are 10 by 14. Is that right?
All right.
Yeah, it's not big. It's not big at all. And the three of them framed side by each on a wall would be a real nice presentation. Mm. So, and that's the other thing is if I'm going to do it in blue and I want to put all three together, I'm going to have to be careful, you know, so they don't look disgusting next to each other.
Well, no, but so. Like on... again, I'm on her website. She's got the spirit piece. Anastasi Spirit is definitely pulling up blue. And if
yeah.
So is there blue within the Arabian Nights and she's just pulling the blue shades, or am I just not seeing it well?
Yeah. There's some blue in there. Yeah. And she's pulling it out, but I think I want to find, I got to go to a store and see what other over dyes there are that would give me more of a blue though.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, and then I, Krynek, I got to look at the Krynek too, because I want to play with it. Yeah.
Well, that's what I love about, for lack of better words, complicated canvas work pieces where you have the chance to play with different types of threads, different combinations. And if you are lucky enough to be able to go to a store and be able to play with the threads and find, you know, that combination that just works for you. You know, that to me, that's the fun and the challenge. When I did a Threadles
yeah.
design.
Curdy Biggs, yes.
Curdy Biggs with a totally my own choice of colorway kind of thing. You know, I couldn't have done that if I had not been able to just sit in a store and pull threads and decide what would work for me. Just because I loved the design, I loved the stitches, I loved the overall layout, but the one piece that I needed to absolutely make my own was color. Right. And that's, you know, it's just, and so that's what I love about some of these counted canvas work pieces that you can, you know, really change up to be, you know, showing your own personality, your own choices, your own home decor, whatever it is that, really appeals to you. So that will be.
Yeah. Well, that Threadles one that you did, that Curdy Biggs one that you did, I think is a classic example of making a piece your own because you changed the colorway, but then you also eliminated elements.
Yes, that is true.
And and changed, you changed it, but you didn't change it. And to me, the end result was absolutely stunning. And by taking away, and I thought that was an interesting approach because most people don't think about taking away, and the combination of what you did with the color and that really, I thought took I mean, I love her stuff. Her stuff is absolutely stunning, but you took it to a different level and it was definitely your own piece all based off of her design. And, you know, when people talk about, changing what the original design was, that often pops in my head as a classic example of what can be done with just a little thought. And you really did that one. You really, that stood out for me is like, wow, you know, applause, Carlene, nice work.
Yeah. I know, like
Because because it really is, it goes against the grain to take out.
Sure. Well, yeah, I get that. I did that with a Gene Hilton piece also, and this was years ago. I remember finding somebody who was blog stitching it, and was just fascinated by it. And at the same time, I was fascinated by it, was also thinking, there's parts of that that just look too busy to me. And Gene Hilton is just such an amazing designer. And I felt like sacrilegious that I would think something like that. And then some years later, there is a store that was able to purchase her copyrights, who owns her copyrights now, and reprinted that particular design. Scott Lee, that's what it's called. So it's Gene Hilton Scott Lee. And you can now purchase it. It is in print. When I got it, I knew I would change the colors to some degree, but I also knew there were parts of it that just needed a little, I don't know, softening, for lack of better words. That definitely needs, if there's some part of a design for whatever it is that you're stitching that doesn't work for you, you need to absolutely consider all the possibilities, whether it's changing a thread, changing a color, adding in something or subtracting something. Like, those are all the things that, you need to consider, whatever is going to make you happy stitching it, That's what I've
always. Yeah, and that's also another interesting thing. When Gene Hilton and someone who's picked up the copyright and made them available, and we're always chasing the latest, greatest, newest, shiny thing. Mm-hmm. But there is a truckload of designs from years ago, from people who have left us, in many cases, particularly charted, whether it's cross stitch or needlepoint or hardanger or whatever. And when people talk about collecting charts and collecting designs that more than they'll ever, ever be able to stitch. But some of those, to me, should be pursued more aggressively than even the new stuff. Because, there's just, through the years, been some brilliant work done. And to keep it alive and to keep stitching it is as important as the new things.
Absolutely. Because there's some beautiful things that, Jane Wood has on Chili Hollow website.
Does she have a website?
Jane really? Wood? Yeah, I think you might be able to find one. I think so.
I'll have to look that up. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to find the name of the person, because before her talking about it, I was not a counted canvas work designer that I was familiar with. I have literally had never seen in person any of. Loretta Spears, there we go. The Loretta Spears Design Archive. I don't know if you've ever explored that part of.
Wait, Loretta, spell that last name.
S P E A R S.
Oh, okay.
Like a sphere that a knight in shining armor would like.
Yes. I couldn't tell if you were saying sphere or spear. Okay, got it.
And so if you ever, on the right-hand side of Jane's website, she's got, a box, and you click on that, and it takes you to a whole nother part of Jane's website, where she's just, I don't know if I've got the wording right, but basically Jane acknowledges this woman was a master of counted canvas work designs, and Jane wanted to have one place where there was a collection of basically any information you could find about this woman, anyone who's ever stitched, and you could find pictures of any of her designs. I believe, if I've got this correct, that there are no designs for sale, and that her family, after she passed away, consciously said, nope, we're not going to sell the reproduction rights. This is it. They are not to be reproduced anymore. So you can basically never find them on eBay or anything like that. It's just so rare to get them. But you can, if you follow that link on Jane's site, you can see some pictures, or you can see links to other people's pictures. And they are just beautiful designs. And you just so wish that you could get access to these designs, They could be stitched again, because some of them are just stunning. And I would, I would have loved to know more about this woman and be able to access some of these designs. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's that history. You know, that's one of the things. I don't know that we have I'm pretty sure we don't have a good mechanism for collecting and saving the history. Mm-hmm. You know, because you have people like Jane Wood who really have taken the time to put that together. There's probably a couple of other things. But other than the reproduction sampler world, you know, we just don't have that. And a lot of, you know, when people pass on and these families, it's like, oh, that was her thing. We're not dealing with that. And, you know, when it ends, or, you know, well, we could sell it, but how can we price it? And, you know, those kinds of things. And so you can see how they end. And then that history and not to, you know, and the designs, design concepts kind of fade away. And it's sad. Who's the person? I think it's a guy. The Dodecagon series.
Jim Worth.
Yes. You know, that's a set of 12 of them. That's a set that should never be allowed to die. You know, that needs to be kept alive and available for stitching forever, because those are absolutely beautiful, every one of them. And you know, I've thought many times, oh, to have number one, to have the time to stitch all of them. But then to have that collection would be a special thing. Yeah. Because that's, you know, it's just unique design. It's a unique shape, design, and a good challenge. And, yeah, I don't know how you do that, you know. Somebody to be a librarian that brings that all together. I just don't know how you do that.
Or, you know, somehow to convince a family, all right, if you don't want to reproduce it, donate it for, you know, the website. And I know this is, things like, Mary Corbett posts about, you know, those websites that have, antique patterns.org.
Oh yeah. The old books that are out of copyright and everything. Oh, what a treasure those are.
But, and there's another one that has a weird website, and it's because there's a whole history, and I know this more from my lace world than stitching world, but you can add, there's a lot of like old DMC publications that are on it, and it's accessed through like Arizona State University, and it's all because of a donation a long, long time ago of who donated the website to it. But basically it is a treasure trove of all kinds of old needlework books, and basically you just got to know the right person to send the thing to. And it will get scanned and thrown up there. And there are, quote, modern things that are on there that have just been donated freely. And, you know, it's sort of like you want to contact some of these families and say, you know, your beloved was so beloved by so many people. Can we please share that works in some way, shape, or form? Who knows?
Well, and you can see how that happens with the family. It's like, oh, that was her thing. She was always doing that. And, you know, what are we going to do with all this stuff? And then behind that is incredible talent in history. And that may not be appreciated by the family. It's certainly not to the, you know, to the level that we appreciate it. And then, you know, we need to have a way to keep that stuff alive. Yeah. So, yeah. And those old books. But then you had it in this week's in your floss tube this week, going to used book sales, and you know the treasures that you find there, and the you know the collection for zero money. You know, I mean you've built up a tremendous library, and I would venture the vast majority of it, if I guess right, has very little money behind it,
but
you've picked them up and you've kept them. And behind you, when you do your floss tube videos, is a nice library of all kinds of things.
Well, and like the two that I showed in my video this week were, I mean, it's the example of why I go to so many used book sales, is the hope that you find things like that. You know, there's plenty of sales that are, you know, not worth talking about. but to find, I could only assume that those two items that I showed were donated by the same person or from the same home or whatever. And, you know, that what, and I, it's like, I want somebody to know they've gone to a treasured home. They've gone to a place where, you know, someone's going to be using them and enjoying them and not, you know, just pick them up for casual, oh, this sort of looks interesting. And you know, that's where, but yeah, there's plenty of times where I'm going to one of those sales or when I'm working at the big book sale that I've volunteered at for years and, you know, opening every box that has come in throughout a year's worth of time for donation. And you just never know, has some big needleworker died and their whole collection was donated. Now that has never really happened. I've never like really gotten like the mother load. I keep thinking, there have been quote mother loads on other topics. There was one year where there was a ridiculous number of like railroad books, not like model trains, but like railroads. And it must have come from somebody who's a big collector. And I just, because I price what is the hobbies, and it's just such a huge catch-all category. Hobbies, what is it called? It's got a bigger name than that. But it's such a catch-all category. It's puzzles and games and art like painting and crafts like sewing. And, you know, so there's so many things that fall under this category. But I just remember that railroad collection books thinking, oh my God, I just hope that there's somebody who comes in here and treasures these because there were so many of them and they were such high quality books. But you know, what can you, so nobody in that person's house was interested in railroads and they were donated. So.
Right. Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and that's just it for, I'm going to just make a guess here, but in the books that you've collected, I would suggest that you don't collect them because there are projects in there, but that you want to do, but there's inspiration for your own designs and certainly techniques and help. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm going to sit down and do three of these projects, but in this book are there's some motifs, some elements that give you inspiration for your own design. I mean, there's value in these books beyond just slogging through the projects that are on the pages.
Absolutely. And so, yes, in the last year and a half since I've been doing designing through my Etsy store, Works by ABC, since I've been like designing and putting it out there, my visits to used bookstores and used book sales and all that, and my seeking out in the world has taken on a different like meaning and a different turn. Certainly in the years past, I would definitely say, sure, I looked at books and looked for inspiration and stuff. But now the looking for inspiration is at such a higher level, because I now have an audience for it, I guess you could say. So yes, I came to the realization that I have collected a lot of books in this last year, such that I needed to get another bookshelf, do some reorganization of, I'm sitting up here now where I usually, film my floss tube videos and been trying to work on some reorganization of my space up here. And, just wanting to have all those recently acquired books in one location just to, you know, the idea of pull it out and what's inspiring from this particular book. What could I gain from flipping through these pages, whether it be a stitch or a stitch diagram or a motif or a, ooh, this is interesting how this was done, or more of the historical piece, you know, that something that I've always been interested in and kind of the connection between needlework and history. And I'm not talking about like the reproduction samplers in that world per se, but just how I could take something from a historical perspective and either interpret it in needle and thread or make a connection with needle and thread or somehow. And so some of the books that I have, you know, are from that perspective. You know, anything that inspires me, I've kind of tried to give myself, and especially if it's at a used book sale for $1 or $2, I try to give myself permission to get it, you know?
Right. Well, that's just it, is you have those resources, but your investment has just been effort.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, that's a pretty good investment, you know, always. Okay. Talk to me about, now, Mary Corbett wrote about the colorists DMC thread some time ago. I remember that distinctly because I remember you showed the chart she made that showed the DMC colors that match up with that. And I think she was being gentle in her article, in her description of it, because I've looked at that thread and thought, oh man, the color changes are so extreme and so quick that I'm not so sure how useful it is. So you bought some of that and you've actually done some stitching, and it's been interesting to see what happens with that thread as you stitch with it, because there are times when that thread just blends into the background for all intents and purposes. And so I was curious and really glad when we were going to be able to talk just to hear from you firsthand what your thinking is with that thread.
Yeah. Well, so I was at Michael's buying needles. And that I was, you know, was on a direct line, go buy needles, get out of the store, move on to the next errand. And
yeah, that never happens.
Well, so, and here truly part of my thinking as I am, you know, work as I have always been in this last year, you know, next steps and not just new designs, but growing and thinking about how I can take my design business and do what with it and so on. One piece that I am still kind of trying to figure out is I am aware, and this is, I credit it to FlossTube, just becoming more and more aware of different types of stitchers that are out there, and especially those who are, I'm going to say, limited to the big box stores in terms of getting supplies. DMC is what they can get. And that, you know, is what it is. I want to say that a lot of my designs, I don't necessarily want to prescribe, you have to stitch in this color. You have to stitch in this thread. That's one of the things that many people have commented that they've liked about my designs, is that I don't, you know, that I try to like encourage, choose what works for you kind of thing. I was so sort of stopped in my tracks to see that colorist, if that's how it's pronounced, thread at Michael's. I knew that Michael's had the color variations, and I know I've seen stitchers using that, and I actually have not stitched with that, but you know, I think I could even remember Mary Corbett's, and you know, you look that up, that was 2 years ago, it was June of 2016. So I'm going to say approximately when that thread first came out, or maybe approximately when it was first available in the US. My first thought is, oh, DMC is getting into a new part of the overdyed thread world. Cause DMC variations had already been around. Some of the overdyed thread lines have, you know, you would say the same color family and just various tones of it. And then you get other threads that are multicolored within one thread, like your, what's in Anastasia Song. Wouldn't you say that thread, would you say Arabian Nights? It has multiple colors in it,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I remember thinking, oh, DMC is giving this a try. And, you know, not necessarily seeking it out. Maybe I've seen it somewhere in some LNS along the way, but there it was in Michael's. And I even posted on Instagram, have you guys had this in your Michael's? And a number of people responded that they did, or that, oh my gosh, I need to go to Michael's right now and just saw it recently, or various things. So it does, the end result is, it seems like it's a pretty recent thing. Okay. So I picked up I picked up four that were just, you know, appealing to my eye, the color families that appeal to me. And again, this comes from the perspective of, in the designs that I am doing, I want to encourage people to do what they love. I want the people who have access and the ability to get whatever threads they love to do whatever they love. But for the people who rely on the big box stores, the Michaels, the Joann's, the Hobby Lobbies, the DMC lines, if the DMC lines are now giving access to colorists, what would it look like? And so one of the designs that I'm currently working on, I, you know, basically have it already charted out. I wasn't necessarily intending to have a model all stitched up. I mean, my I think different designers have different ways of doing things. What has worked for me so far is I have stitched some of the designs that I have designed, but not all of them. I just haven't had models created for all of them. But I have this one design, and it's basically ready to go when I'm ready to release my next set of designs. And I thought, you know what? It's a small thing. I'm just going to go ahead and give this a try. So I started stitching using one of the colorist threads. And, you know, my first reaction to it was how quickly when it switched from one color to the next in comparison to other over dyed threads that I used. I mean, it would literally be, I would, you know, go down to finish an X with the purple.
You're right.
Come up and there would be green. Like,
yep, exactly. Yeah.
There was no, ooh, green's about to come.
There's no transition whatsoever. It's bang.
There was no transition. And that, you know, of course, that's probably the factor of the way that they manufactured it. And of course, the immediate thing I then thought was, have I ever bought variations or have any variations in the house? I want, you know, is DMC variations like this? I, you know, of course, it's making me question that. And it might be the next trip to Michael's that I'll need to pick up something of that. And I know that you can find what you can manipulate over dyes, you know, if you're doing cross stitch. So if you're just focusing on, well, you could do it with any stitching, but as I was focusing on cross stitch, you can do, if you're doing, you know, if I was going to do like a full square, you know, I could do diagonals or I could do rows and you could get different effects. You could also do dots where you're sort of dotting around and you would get a total random effect. You can get different effects with over dyes depending on what order you're putting the stitches in. And I, you know, I decided I didn't want to do the total random dot thing. I was trying to, mostly what I was doing was on a slant, mostly diagonals. And I posted a picture on Instagram. I've gotten some interesting comments and feedback about it. It will be interesting to get the rest. It's like, it'll be a little circular thing. And then it will also be accented with the solids that make up. So the color threads are made up of four shades. And this particular one I'm using is two like purples and two greens. And I'll accent the design with those purples and greens. And it'll be interesting to see what the overall effect is. Now, one of the people who responded commented about a particular piece where she used that thread. And I've seen a picture of that piece and it's beautiful. Now, I knew that there was like an over-dyed thread in there. I didn't necessarily know it was the DMC colorist thread. I didn't necessarily study it to see how quickly the colors jumped. You know, am I overanalyzing this too much? Yes, absolutely. so, you know, it's just, it's the combination of, this is potentially now a thread that has much more access out there than previously been thought. Am I still going to love a lot of other hand-dyed threads over this? Yeah, probably. Okay. But it's a curious experiment. And whenever I get ideas, I like to be able to experiment with them. And this one was just, I just got to see how this stuff plays out. But I am now curious to see their variations line, whether the jumps, again, the color families aren't as different. You know, it's more the same shades or something, you would say. I'm curious to see if the jumps, though, are as non-transitional, for lack of better words.
Yeah, abrupt.
Thank you, abrupt.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's one of the things that I am trying to play with a little bit just to see, because, you know, with a traditional hand dyed, you can even manipulate if you are, this gray is going on too long. You could just hold a little much of it in the back and, you know, shorten up the gray or, you know, play with it a little bit. This is just not like that. It's just very, and that's, you know, that's what they're saying. It's exactly whatever number of inches per color. So trying a little experiment, and we'll see. And I will certainly say, you know, when I finish it and be able to show it as a finished design, there is nothing about this that making you required to do this design with an overdyed thread. You can certainly do this with solids. I was in no way intending to do it as a overdyed. It was just something I had charted and ready to go that I thought, huh, I'm going to give this a try. So that's the story of my little experiment.
Well, it's fun to play with, you know, and that's the thing that we have these days is we have so many threads and so many different combinations that you can really play around a lot and just try stuff. And then on top of this, with this color, if anybody is going to play with that, be sure to go to Mary Corbett's Needle and Thread and get that chart. Yes. because she has matched up the solid DMC colors with each of the colors that are in those thread combinations. So you can use that colorist thread as a base or an accent and then have the exact DMC matches for all those colors. So she really has built with that chart colorways for you that you can play with. So it's, to me, that's if you're going to play with colorists, that's a valuable thing to have in your back pocket.
Yep. She also has on that, from that same blog post, the color variations thread line and their DMC solid matches. I said in my FlossTube video, it's like she had more information about colorists than I could find on DMC's website.
Much truth in that, Arlene, much truth in that.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you once again, Mary
Absolutely.
Corbett.
With two T, with one T, mind you.
One T, please.
Yes, one T.
So, okay, yeah, as always, running out of time. Retreats of all kinds are kind of the rage these days. Been a lot of them in the last few months. And you've been recently involved in two.
Yes.
One that you organized and put on in New Jersey. And then just recently, the StitchCon retreat in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious, I've watched, and of course, I don't watch a broad spectrum of FlossTubes. I have my little group that I watch. And I keep hearing StitchCon was amazing. The New Jersey retreat was amazing. The Midwest retreat was amazing. And that word is just used time and time again. And so I wanted to ask you, what, you know what I mean? Okay, amazing doesn't define anything for me. What is it that is about these gatherings that you would say other stitchers who have not had an opportunity, especially if one's in your backyard, you need to go because you need to experience this? What is it? What are the things that go on in these retreats and these gatherings that define amazing?
So now, of course, everyone's going to have their own personal opinion or personal take on that. So you're going to get my personal take, but I want to say,
but Arlene, your personal take is special.
Okay.
To me.
I'm going to say there's probably going to be some people who are going to agree with what I'm about to say, that for me, the amazing part was about the human connection that happened, that it was because of this, like, I'm going to say recent surge of retreats that have been happening thanks to the FlossTube world, that while there have been ways of connecting with stitchers online in forums and groups and whatever for some number of years, and Facebook comes along, and then there's new ways, but now with the YouTube video FlossTube thing, there is, to me, it has added a dimension of truly feeling like you're meeting people. So with FlossTube, I started to feel like I was knowing people that I truly was just interacting with through their videos. So this idea of getting together for a few days to stitch with others that I knew but I had not met before, but I didn't feel like I didn't meet them before because it totally felt like I had met them before.
Yeah.
And
that's a weird dynamic, isn't
but
it?
But you know what? I would not use the word weird. I mean, that's the thing. Is that it just?
I mean, positively, it's weird because you know them, but you have not met
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know, to put it out there, back in the fall when there was the Floss Tube Austin retreat going on, and I could see because there were videos being posted and pictures being shared, and you know, there was this person that I felt like I know, and this person that I felt like I know, but those people are in the same room together and they're stitching side by side, and they're like pointing to each other stitching and talking about whatever they were talking about. And I just thought, I want to be there with them. And I have never had that feeling before. I don't belong to guilds and groups and do stitchy gatherings. I've never been that kind of person. I just haven't. And yet here were the first time I was getting that kind of desire. And that was where I said, all right, if I can't be there right now, I'm going to make those people come to me in effect, because of where I live on the East Coast in New Jersey. I knew that there would be the appeal of the geographic location. I had a very good large needlework store that would be a draw, and putting it out there to the immediate response from floss tubers, as well as people. I mean, I put it out there through my floss tube, and however you could say the word spread, it definitely was through floss tube. Now, did people come to my retreat in New Jersey that were not, you know, super duper into the floss tube community? Sure. But the majority either made floss tube videos or watched floss tube videos. And to me, that was such a special connection that I don't know how you compare it to other kind of stitching gatherings. And again, it's this new, relatively new, few years new world that is happening through these videos. And so StitchCon being a similar idea, getting floss tubers to come together with, I mean, their catchphrase is floss tubers and fans. It's the same idea. People who make floss tube videos and the fans, and, you know, all of us who make floss tube videos say it over and over that those who comment are just as important as those who make the videos, and how important that is to us, the interactions. And both in New Jersey and at StitchCon, having the opportunity to meet some of the people that I would say are the regular commenters. And, you know, because maybe I didn't know them by face and I didn't know their voice and I didn't really know them the same way I know the floss tubers. Oh my gosh, such wonderful, amazing people. All right, there it goes. I use that word. Amazing people. So the human connection that came from this. Now, the other pieces, there's no question about this, to walk around a room and admire the variety of stitching and to have the connections, have the conversations about how did you get started and what kinds of things have you stitched and what events have you been to and, oh my gosh, what kind of magnifier are you using or what kind of light are you having? All those conversations, no doubt, amazing, wonderful. To be in a room, New Jersey, it was about 75-80, StitchCon, it was about 150. To be in a room with that many people who love what you love, who are passionate about it, who simply get you, that you don't have to like explain yourself, you know, that is priceless. You know,
isn't that interesting, right?
Yes,
there
it is.
People who get
absolutely
you
know. And we all, you know, some of us were just sharing our stories of the travel, you know, sitting in an airport stitching, and, you know, how many of us did that on our way there or back. And, you know, the looks you get from people, positively or negatively, and how, but once you got to StitchCon, there's no looks. You're just home. You're just with your people. I mean, we use that phrase over and over. You're with your people. And it's just so comforting and it's the environment. That's, to me, what made these two recent events in my life amazing, is those few days where I could be with people that totally, you know, we could, the conversation could switch back and forth between stitching and non-stitching, or we could get silly, or, you know, I told the story in my floss tube about this dress that was bought at a thrift store, and it got cut up, and I was stitching on it, and I've stitched the StitchCon logo on it, and that just became just this treasured, it is a treasured memory from that whole weekend. And that is so incredibly special. And to me, that, you know, talk about like the ideal vacation. I don't need to go to a beach. I don't need to have a grand tour. I need to be with people that get me. I need to be people that care about me. I need to be with people that enjoy what I enjoy. That, you know, when someone would come back from the store, it was sharing what they purchased, or when someone ran out of a thread, oh my gosh, I ran out of 712. Okay, don't worry. Someone in this room has 712. And sure enough, we found somebody who had 712, you know? that to me, that all of those pieces, that's what makes those events amazing. Now, I don't have the experience. I mean, part of my joke is that I organized a large stitching retreat, having never really gone to a stitching retreat. I know that they existed before FlossTube. I know that some FlossTubers have shared video and pictures or just told stories of going to retreats. They use that word, gatherings of 25 people, 100 people, whatever the number. Sometimes the classes and teachers are involved, sometimes not. Sometimes it's something they've been to for many years with friends. The word that gets used over and over is about the people, whether, you know, they're interacting with friends or people they only see once a year. You know, that's the joy that's involved with it. And so for me, that's what made it amazing. That's what, you know, we've all joked about how hard it is to, you know, to return from a retreat, is to come away from that magical time when you're just with people that you want to be with. And
okay.
The stitching happens. There's no doubt about that. And you enjoy everything that people are doing, but it's a pretty special experience. So that's my definition of amazing. There you go.
Okay. All right. That helps. Thank you. All right. Before we run out of time, Works by ABC. What's coming up? What do you got going and what do you got coming that we need to look forward to?
Oh, thank you.
We got to get a plug in, Arlene. Get a plug in.
Absolutely. So because of the work I did in making a stitching retreat happen in May, I had to consciously say, all right, not too much focus in design work, but once the school year is over, I've been working hard. My goal right now is by the end of July, but first week of August, I want to put out a new set of designs. And like the other things that I have done, it's a variety. So one thing I showed in my recent FlossTube video, a little preview, I had I showed this a few videos ago. I purchased a filet lace tablecloth at a antiques mall that I've turned into a cross stitch chart and also a blackwork chart, because I just liked the idea of being able to do it in two different mediums. And I just think that there might be others that would be appealing to. I'm currently stitching the blackwork version of it. It's large, so I'm not going to claim it's going to be fully stitched. I'd rather get the pattern out there first, but eventually there will be a finished model of it. I'll have a new canvas work design and a few other cross stitch pieces that are out there. So my goal, let's just say first week of August, so keep your eye on my Etsy store, Works by ABC. It's my joy and my love to be working on that part of my life. And I just have so appreciated the positive feedback that I've gotten from folks who've loved my designs. And so I'm going to keep doing it.
Well, all right. Well, yeah. So yeah, do the Etsy thing, Works by ABC. And then your Instagram is Works by ABC too,
yes,
right?
Yes, I am Works by ABC on Instagram. I am Arlene Cohen on FlossTube. And the short version of that is, and I shared this at StitchCon, if you're going to start a floss tube, make sure you know what you're doing on YouTube. And if you want to like start a fresh account, don't attach it to your personal email. Start a fresh account because I can't change my name, Arlene Cohen, on FlossTube without totally messing up my own personal email. So I'm just Arlene Cohen on FlossTube, but Works by ABC on Instagram. Yes. So you can also look on Instagram. I will post there of some progress updates of my stitching, as well as when new designs come out. And the stitching I'm doing now basically predominantly is all my new designs. It's just what I've been stitching. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will just say, in your presence, because I say it everywhere else, by far my favorite FlossTube video is, you know, watch Arlene's videos, because there's so many things that you see and hear and learn about in her videos. I highly recommend to everyone all the time. And if nothing else, bobbin lace, just watching her to make lace is worth everything. So, yeah, that to me, that's the top one for me is Arlene's. Because you really do an excellent job of explaining, showing, and a variety and background, and I just enjoy them every time. And on top of that, you know, you can look around over and under projects like nobody.
Yeah, so. Well, absolutely. I will. Quick question: when you start your Sarah Brazier, are you working on Skorots on your Millennium frame? What do you?
Right.
And how yep. big is your rod? How big is your frame?
36-inch rods. Yeah, it's a big sucker. Yep. The linen is 30x30.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's 40 count. And some people are doing 36 and 30 or 32 or whatever it is, and that's even bigger. But yeah, it's gigantic. And
so you have 36-inch rods.
Rods, wow. Yeah, and 30-inch linen across. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot.
No, because that's I was just thinking. So this tablecloth blackwork thing that I'm working on, I was briefly contemplating buying like 30-inch rods, and I don't know if I will do it or if I'll stick with the Q snaps. But I was thinking, man, if I got those 30-inch rods, boy, you would be impressed with me trying to poke around that. But we'll see. We'll see what you end up seeing in the next time I show it. So.
Hey, get 36-inch rods, and I might even pay money to watch you look over, under, and around that. I might just pay money, yeah.
I'll keep that one in mind. All right.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's going to be it. Arlene, thanks so much for filling in for Christine. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it, too. Anytime.
Yep.
And Sunday, Teresa Vanette, Shakespeare's Peddler, ooh, also known as the Kitten Stitcher. Mm-hmm. She and I talked for an hour plus. What a treat.
Excellent.
So that's Sunday. Teresa Vanette. Don't want to miss that one, I'll tell you. I don't care what you stitch or how you stitch it. You want to listen in on that one. So that's a good one. All right, Arlene, that's it. Thanks so much. Thanks to everybody for listening. And Christine will be back with us next week.
Take care.